This reminds me of the time I tried to reach the center of South America. I'd be following my favorite explorer, Sir Francis Drake. I spent weeks preparing. I didn't even get this far. Of course, I was only 12 at the time.
Tom, check this out.
His initials! Sir Francis Drake! That means El Dorado must be right through this wall! So Josh, I'm about to date this episode hardcore.
Oh yeah?
Yeah, how's quarantine holding up for you?
Oh my god. The movie or the actual real life excursion that we've been going through this past couple days?
So it is March 15th, 2020. We don't often like announce when we're recording this, but I am in day three of government-ordered quarantine. My entire county was shut down by our governor. I'm out of work for 2 weeks. It's something. You never think you'll live to see things like this. How about you?
It's really funny that I'm on vacation right now. I'm finishing up vacation. So the entire time I've been on vacation in my house playing games, everyone's like, you need to stay home. I'm like, okay, fine. No shit. Like, I'm going to stay home. I'm playing video games the whole time. It's like,
are you sure? Like, okay. I've been thinking about going back. I don't know.
Yeah, everyone's been freaking out. Becca's been going crazy with it, and I understand the idea, but I think people are blowing this way out of proportion.
What do you mean, Josh? Toilet paper is the cure for respiratory illness, don't you know?
Yeah, and that's we went to Target a couple days ago, and she was like, we need to get toilet paper, we need to get this. I'm like, no, we don't. Like, we don't need it at all. She's like, well, listen, if we can't go anywhere, like, we have to stay at home, we're going to run out of toilet paper sooner or later. I'm like, that makes sense, but we have like paper towels.
Yeah.
We got like other stuff. Like, I could just get in a shower. It's a bidet built into my house. Like, I'm good.
And if worst comes to worst, there's always copies of Game Informer, you know? So
exactly. It's really funny though, seeing people freak out. It's very similar to The Division.
I've heard a couple of people and make that kind of comparison.
Do you know the story of The Division?
The Division's like an elite government squad that's meant to be activated when there's national emergencies, and like this disease spreads across America and there's people rioting and looting, so the Division gets activated and they have to bring order to cities and
Correct.
Stuff.
Yeah, the first game is based off of, it's called the Dollar Flu Virus.
Okay.
It was a virus that was attached to money and distributed during Black Friday. So, like, think about, like, all the people going crazy, people being out. Like, it's one of those things, like, oh my god, it's like real life Division right now.
I mean, there are already so much bacteria and gross crap on money to begin with, so it makes sense.
And there's supposed to be a Division movie or TV show coming out or something like that.
Yeah, Jake Gyllenhaal.
Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yep. I don't know what's going on. I'm sure it's being delayed right now because of just because of the subject matter.
Yeah, let's talk about things that were being delayed for a really long time and now are finally coming back on track. This is A Cast of the Past, where best friends get together to talk about old games in a new light. I'm Josh.
And I'm Tom.
And today we're talking about Uncharted.
Drake's Fortune.
Yeah, it's gonna be good.
Yeah, we realized Sony had a little bit of a drought in terms of episodes. We wanted to get back around to the PlayStation gang and talk about one of their kind of defining franchises up to this point in history.
I know when I bought my PlayStation 3, this was the first game that I bought for it.
Okay.
Just because I needed it. Because I was hearing all these great things. It was a Sony exclusive. It was a PlayStation exclusive that Xbox players just didn't have. And I was like, you know, it was at the time, it was right at the end of that PlayStation 3 scare where people were stealing your credit card information through your PlayStation 3. And I was like, well, it's a good thing I'm a Microsoft player. Like, and then I was like, you know what? Like, the dust has settled a little bit. Let's go ahead and we'll buy a PS3 on Black Friday.
Okay.
And I got a couple free games with it. I traded those in to get Uncharted. and heavy rain at the same time. And I was like, well, I got to play Uncharted no matter what. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. Yeah, I played this for the first time in preparation for this episode. I think as we mentioned on this podcast before, I missed the entire PlayStation 3 generation just due to never, you know, getting on the boat with it. I had many chances to buy a PS3 and play the games, but I just never got around to it. So mostly all the exclusive PS3 games, never touched them. And then my lovely co-host, Josh Yeager, here one day, I'm visiting his new house and he shoves a box into my hand. I'm like, what's this? And I open it up and he's like, I'm giving you an extended borrowing of my PS3. Here's a stack of essential games. I'm tired of not being able to cover Sony games for the podcast, so hurry up. And I was like, okay. And
the nice thing when you were talking to me about it, when you plugged it into the house, there's also a bunch of like games on the system pre-downloaded too, mm-hmm. that are like essentials too, which is nice.
It's like you knew the quarantine was coming and you set me up for it, because now there's no possibility of me being bored.
Well, hopefully you weren't bored with this game.
Oh, I have a lot of things to say about this game, but overall I do want to say that this was a very chill and exciting adventure that kept bringing me back to it even after I put it down.
Good.
Very awesome. Much enjoyed it. But yeah, before we get into this, Josh, do you want to get us through the nitty-gritty?
Yes. So the nitty-gritty for Uncharted Drake's Fortune. Uncharted Drake's Fortune was released on November 20th, 2007 from the developers Naughty Dog. Now, Tom, Naughty Dog sounds awfully familiar. Up at this time, like, what were they known for?
Mostly the Crash Bandicoot and Jack and Daxter series, am I right?
I was going to say, you know, some people would say the best, you know, platforming mascot out there. Yeah.
Who?
And member of the best, you know, kart racer, too, of the 90s.
I'm sorry, I don't hear you saying Diddy Kong at all. So
No, I'm talking about Crash Bandicoot.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's in an all right kart racing game.
Okay, first off, do you remember the commercials for Crash Bandicoot where he was standing outside of Nintendo's headquarters with the megaphone? Like, You don't see Diddy Kong going around saying, you know, stuff like that. Diddy Kong wears a hat for the company that he works for, okay?
Yeah.
It's like us wearing a hat that says America on it.
I mean, look, when you're on top, you don't need to go and get on a megaphone and yell at your competitors. You're already winning. So, yeah, Crash had to go and agitate Nintendo because he wanted to be seen. But, you know, Diddy Kong didn't even need to look out his window. He was just like, some riffraff down on the streets. I'm sorry, he didn't say, he went,
But yes, it was developed by Naughty Dog, published by the Sony Computer Entertainment Company as well.
Gotcha.
The nice thing about Uncharted, though, was the director, Amy Hennig. Amy Hennig was actually a part of the Legacy of Kain series, the Jack and Daxter series, and she did Uncharted 1, 2, and 3.
Okay.
Like, she's been a creator of a lot of great games and gaming franchises.
Yes, I didn't know everything that you just said. I didn't know about the Legacy of Kain, but what's cool about Uncharted that I played on the PS3 is that it comes with a lot of interesting bonus features, like making of documentaries, and that's where I got like introduced to Amy Hennig and the rest of the creative team. As I went over and over again on the Lion King and Aladdin episode, I like when games give us bonus features, and so this was great. I played Uncharted, and then I sat down and learned about how it was made, and it was very interesting and very useful for this podcast.
Yeah, I was talking to Becca about it today, too, when I was watching some behind-the-scenes stuff with it. And it's awesome that they pretty much filmed the entire game with live actors.
Yes, through motion
capture. And then they made the game, like they motion captured like almost the entire game, which is crazy. And then they went ahead and made the game on top of that. So it's like they did two different sets of like filming of this entire game or creation of this game and the story. But one thing about Amy Hennig, though, and it's really sad. So back in 2014, she joined Visceral Games.
Okay.
Right? And if you're aware of Visceral Games, known for the Dead Space series.
Yes.
Right? She signed on with Visceral Games after Uncharted 3 to work on a Star Wars game.
Oh, I know where this is going.
That got scrapped because of the EA Disney thing and stuff like that. Like, they scrapped that game, and that was back when 1313 got scrapped and all those other games that they were working on ended up getting just thrown out. And it sucks because like seeing a Star Wars game in like the Uncharted style, I think would have been awesome.
Yeah, I very much would like to see that.
That's one of those things, like in an alternate universe, we would actually get PT and we would get, you know, Amy Hennig's Star Wars Uncharted type game. But
well, it's unfortunate that we'll never know. But in this reality, we've got a pretty cool game to talk about. And Josh, before we jump back into the past, we have to do some research to make sure we know everything about history. So I have some research questions for you. Are you ready?
Yes. Give me the information of 2007 that I probably forgot about.
Okay. So just to kind of get you settled into 2007, I feel like nothing helps Josh and I remember history better than marking the years by WrestleManias. So Josh, what was the main event of WrestleMania in 2007?
So 2007 was the year that I graduated high school.
Yes.
Was it Shawn Michaels Undertaker?
Oh, no. No, that was 2 years after.
So the main event. So, 2 years before. Oh, man. Shawn
Michaels was in the main event.
Was it the Triple Threat?
Nope. It was Shawn Michaels versus John Cena. Yes, it was WrestleMania 23.
Okay.
And it was Shawn Michaels versus John Cena for the WWE Championship. And guess what? Cena won, LOL. So
what? Surprise.
All right.
I didn't see him. That's probably why I forgot that he was in it.
Why is Shawn Michaels dancing around the ring with nobody else? Shawn Michaels could wrestle nobody. It would still be the most entertaining match of all time.
He did against Hulk Hogan that time.
That's true, because Hulk Hogan wasn't doing anything. all right, so onto more of an Uncharted specific question. They cited several sources of inspiration for this series, which you can very plainly see when you play the game. They talked about adventure serials from the 1930s and 40s, and they talked about some more modern movie inspirations. Now, the obvious one is Indiana Jones, but there was one other film from the 2000s that they cited as an inspiration for this game. What was it?
Ooh. Was it National Treasure?
It was.
Oh, yeah. We're going to steal the Declaration of El Dorado.
Ooh. Here it is, a piece of paper. What's on it? El Dorado. This is worthless. But I stole it, though. All right, last question. Yep. Last shenanigans, and then we'll get into the episode. So, as you said, this was released on November 19th, 2007. This was the first game in what turned out to be a very long and very successful franchise of games, right?
Mm-hmm.
3 days before Uncharted was released, another first entry in a long-running and successful franchise of games debuted. What was that game?
It was 2007.
Yes.
BioShock?
Nope.
Oh.
I'll give you a small hint. It's another game about jumping around and climbing.
Was, I don't know.
Assassin's Creed.
Assassin's Creed.
Yes.
Ah, I knew it. Ah, I got it right at the end there.
Two major franchises launching within 3 days of each other. I thought that was pretty crazy when I saw it.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. Well, that's for another day, maybe, Assassin's Creed. But right now, we're going to have a little talk about Nathan Drake.
So, Tom, this is your first time playing the Uncharted games.
Yes.
Give me your little rundown, your experiences, what you thought of the game. I know now you're playing the PlayStation 3 version, so it's 13 years pretty much after release. It probably didn't look as best as it could have, but give me a little bit of your intake on on your time with Uncharted.
Well, all right, yeah, so I preferred to play the PlayStation 3 version because I figured I should get the experience as it was. And Josh, just to clarify, you played the Nathan Drake Collection re-release of this on the PlayStation 4?
Yes.
Okay. So
yes, I did.
I would actually like to ask some questions throughout the episode about if anything was polished or changed a little bit, just to see if a couple of the gripes I did have, maybe they got cleaned up.
Okay.
So, right. This is a very linear, straightforward adventure game in which you take on the role of treasure hunter Nathan Drake, who believes himself to be a descendant of the legendary explorer Sir Francis Drake, and he is following a trail of clues that Francis left around the world to find the legendary lost city of El Dorado, which historically has been rumored to contain untold treasures. And he's accompanied by his kind of friend slash sidekick, Victor Sullivan, a.k.a. Sully, who's a...
Wait, hold on. Hmm? It's Victor Goddamn Sullivan.
Victor Goddamn Sullivan. he's a cigar-chomping, debt-having adventurer himself. He's a little bit older, a little bit scruffier, and he's a very loyal friend to Nate, but he's got his own agendas. You know, he's in deep money-wise to some shady people, and that creates some issues for Drake. And then Drake is also accompanied by Elena Fisher, who is kind of a nature or historical documentary maker. When the game begins, she's filming Nate having discovered some treasure in the ocean. And she kind of becomes, you know, an ally because she's looking for a good story for her TV show. But she also kind of finds a lot of admiration in Nathan's adventurous spirit. So the three people, Nathan, Elena, and Sully, who are always looking for these lost mysteries or just these incredible experiences around the world, and you're off on one of their adventures with them. Josh, what do you think about the kind of cast of characters in this game?
The cast is fantastic. Mm-hmm. So one thing with this game, though, that you really do notice is they're not really fully sold on the characters that they're playing, right?
Performance-wise, you would say?
Performance-wise. And you can tell that this is a game, though, that's kind of revolutionary, you know, for what games are going to become in the future.
Okay.
When you play Uncharted 2 and Uncharted 3, like, the actors are extremely bought into their characters. Then I'm not saying that they weren't in this one here, but you can see that they're kind of just getting a feel for what their character is supposed to be. This was the first time I was introduced to Nolan North,
mm-hmm.
who now Nolan North, after you look at his IMDb page, has pretty much been in every video game ever made.
He's like the Kevin Bacon of gaming, you know, like everyone could do 6 degrees.
Yeah, exactly. 6 degrees of Nolan North.
Mm-hmm.
But the cast of characters is great. Like I said, they didn't have me fully sold on each of their characters when I was playing through this the first time. But like I said, when you play Uncharted 2, 3, and 4, like, these actors are completely sold on the characters that they are portraying.
Okay, so like, they grow into it.
Are living. Yeah, it's like a night and day difference. It's like The Office Season 2 compared to The Office Season 1.
Okay. I could see that. And especially because in the behind-the-scenes features, the actor who plays Sully, I feel embarrassed that I didn't memorize his name as much as Nolan North, but when he's talking about the motion capture experience, he's, as an actor, talking about how this is very unusual for him. This isn't something that he's used to, having to act in a tight, you know, skin-tight latex suit with dots all over him and pretending that he's in a jungle when he's actually in a big warehouse. It was really interesting to see how far we've come, because now motion capture acting is the norm. You know, actors in all kinds of big-budget TV and movies in video games, like, this is just what you do. So, as you said, this was revolutionary because this is the first time you were seeing this done in video games and, I'm sure, around movies at the time.
Right. Yeah, it was Richard McGonagall.
Okay. And he does a hell of a job, I just want to say. He's very, very good as Sully.
Yeah, it's awesome. Like, when I looked at Sully and, like, it, just his character, like, I just kept picturing, like, Bruce Campbell.
I could see it, yeah.
Almost. Like, it's just a very, like, he just goes with it. He's just, yeah, he's there for the treasures. He's kind of the wise sidekick, but he's also there just for the money. He doesn't care about all the other stuff that's about it. He just wants to get rich.
Yeah, he's a ball buster. You know, like, Nathan might pick up a valuable vase and say, oh, this is from this year, and it was part of this and that. And Sully would go, how much can I get for it? You know?
Yeah, so, exactly.
Yeah. So, anyway, we keep talking about treasure, and that's the main goal of the game. Now, I said earlier, this is a linear game, so it's not like kind of like a free roaming open world kind of experience. You're put into these levels that have, I would just say this is basically a 3D platformer, you know, like you're guided down one path, sometimes you'll stop to have like shootouts in some wider spaces with cover, because this is also a bit of a third-person cover-based shooter, but it's a lot of climbing and jumping and puzzle solving, and you get from point A to point B, and you'll get some new story information, a cutscene that kind of tells you what's going to be happening next, and then you resume the gameplay. So it's a game that funnels you through the story, because the story and the characters do take a lot of the precedent in this title. And it's good that the story and characters are as good as they are. You know, it keeps you interested.
Right. And I'm going to say, like, these games are meant for the story. The story to these games are fantastic. Yes, it's a lot of like, oh, we got here and now we have to go here. And we got here. It's a dead end, but not really a dead end. Now it's going to send us this way. Like, it's just a normal, like we said, an Indiana Jones / National Treasure type story.
Sure.
But kept you invested the entire time, which is awesome.
Absolutely.
And then like when the third act happens and you're like, wait, what? Like, and then you realize more and more keeps unveiling. That's where kind of that Indiana Jones style kicks into play, where there's usually like a supernatural element, a part to it, where you're like, oh, I didn't even expect this to happen.
Absolutely. So Amy Hennig mentions in one of the behind-the-scenes documentaries on this game that they built it around three pillars: traversal, gunplay, and melee combat. So I want to talk about those real quick. Traversal, obviously, is the platforming elements I'm talking about. Nathan can jump up and climb along ledges. He can jump between walls. He can swing on ropes to get between areas. He swims. He can sometimes operate vehicles. And I will say it's not always precise. There were like a couple moments where I couldn't get Nate to like specifically grab like a rope or something, or there was a couple moments where he wouldn't acknowledge a ledge. They do this very interesting thing of like all the environments in this game are painted very realistically, but like with emphasis on color. So you can always tell when an edge is climbable, because like it'll be just a shade of a different color than other rocks around you. And you're like,
yeah, it's usually a little lighter.
But there was just a few moments I would say that like I still couldn't tell at certain moments, and it was just a lot of trial and error. And so like, you know, sometimes I would die a lot, but you know, I never felt like the platforming in this game was unfair.
Yeah, it's like I said, you can tell this is kind of the first set of something like this.
Yeah.
Right? It's the first game out that it's like a playable action movie. Sure. Is the best way. Like, yeah, you had games like Gears of War and whatnot, but like this was more of a action adventure movie.
Yes.
And that's what I think kept a lot of people invested in it. Yes. Controls. Personally, I'm not a huge fan of the PS3 controller. I don't think thumbsticks should be that close to each other.
Yeah, you know, annoying. I absolutely agree with you. Like, being that this is the first time I've played a dedicated PlayStation game in a long time, I found my, like, just the finger placement did feel awkward. And having to reach up to the left for the D-pad didn't feel too natural, because I've just been playing with Xbox One or Nintendo controllers for years. So, yeah, it was a little jarring, subconsciously.
Yeah.
So the second pillar that Amy Hennig said was gunplay. And here's where I want to say some just a few nitpicks about this game. They're going for a realistic adventure movie kind of vibe. And so they do the thing that I've said in this podcast that I hate. They limit you to only being able to carry two guns at a time, one like a small light pistol type of gun, and then a rifle sized gun, which can vary. It can be like a machine gun or a sniper rifle or a shotgun, but that's it. You can only have two types of guns. And it really hurt within the game when you were in a low ammo situation and you had to dump like a really great gun that you had been carrying for a while to, you know, take a less good weapon just to get you through a situation. Like, there are revolvers in this game that will kill enemies in one hit, and they're really handy with some of the tougher bad guys, but you very rarely find revolver ammo. And then, like, you're pinned down, and it's like, oh, I have to drop the revolver to pick up a regular handgun because that has ammo. And it's like, it bummed me out, you know. And it's also kind of annoying where it's like, oh, this guy can hold a billion secret treasures and artifacts in his backpack, but he can only carry two guns. Like, what the heck?
I don't know. I guess it's something that I'm familiar with for a while.
Sure.
That it wasn't super annoying to me because, like, playing the Halo games, or like I said, playing Gears of War or all those other games that pretty much only gave you two options for weapons. Like, this is one of those things. It was more of a survival type game. So sure. I understood like they wanted it to be as real as possible.
I'll give them that. I understand.
But then at the end, at the same time, you shot somebody seven times with a pistol and they're still running at you. And you're like,
this game.
How realistic is it?
Yeah. The enemies in this game just drink bullets like fish. I'm not kidding. There was so many moments in this game. Like, my sister came into the room when I was playing once, and she watched me unload like an entire clip from an AK-47 into a bad guy, and he flailed around a lot like a bad guy from GoldenEye on the N64, and then he just like kept firing at me, and she was like, why isn't he dead yet? And I found that a lot. Like, I was playing on normal difficulty for the entire run, and I was just like, why aren't you dead yet? And that plays into just a small gripe I have about the combat setups. Basically, like I said, like you enter a level, you'll do some platforming, and then you'll encounter waves of enemies. And there was a point, I think around chapter 4, where I just found that the waves of enemies got too repetitive and just honestly kind of tedious. They take too many hits to die. They kind of get comical when they start interrupting, like, what's supposed to be an important story moment. Like, Drake will see, like, a tower in the distance, and he'll be like, oh, I wonder if Elena and Sully are okay. I really hope I get to him. And then before Drake's even done talking, you hear somebody be like, there he is, get him! You know, like, and it's like, guys, I'm trying to hang out with Nate here. Leave me alone. So, yeah. I know it's built around gun combat, but there was just some points in the game where I was like, you're fighting enemies for 20 minutes and you're like, okay, I'm done. And then it's like, oh, nope, here's 10 more. It felt like padding at times.
Right. Yeah. You got to kind of break up the puzzle and the shooting and stuff like that. But what's the third pillar then, Tom?
The third pillar is just melee combat. And I'm just going to say, I feel like I barely use melee combat at all, really. I don't feel like there was any situation in the game where it was more advantageous to try to run up to somebody and beat them up, because most of the game is fighting waves of enemies with firearms. You can't go and start fighting a guy because his friends are going to shoot you. So if that was a pillar, I don't think they executed it that well.
It was good to use it when, like, you were sneaking up behind somebody to kind of do a stealth attack.
Yeah, but that's very rare.
But you will definitely use it in Uncharted 3. Mm. Uncharted 3, they kind of break down the melee combat a little bit more, and they make it a little bit more user friendly. You can do combos, you can do like instant takeouts with people and stuff like that in like fights, like if you're doing certain button combinations and whatnot.
Okay.
That gets introduced in Uncharted 3 though, which I'll get to that about the end about Uncharted 3, because there's a lot of debate between Uncharted 2 and 3. I will tell you, this is the least best of the three Uncharted games.
Okay. Well, considering that I like this one a lot, despite some of its few flaws, I guess I'm in for some upward momentum.
Yeah. I mean, hey, there was a game last year that I liked a lot, despite all of its flaws as well. And that was Jedi Fallen Order. Okay.
No, same. Absolutely the same.
But
gotcha.
So the game opens up with Nathan Drake recovering the coffin of Sir Francis Drake. And afterwards, they get invaded by some pirates. Mr. Solid comes and saves them a little bit. But then we were walking through the forest and going through some tombs and whatnot. And we discover a Nazi U-boat in the middle of the jungle.
How did this get here?
What's up with
that? We're in South America.
Which is kind of crazy to see. But it was like, all right, that's cool. I guess we might find out what this is doing here later. But after you discover a map on the boat, you accidentally set off a torpedo inside the boat. And once Nate swims ashore, he is greeted by Roman and Navarro.
Yes, the baddies of this game. Roman's kind of a classy, aristocratic treasure thief. you know, he's a little bit older and he's got this fancy air about him, but you can tell that he's probably killed some people. And Navarro is a little bit of a mercenary type, a gun for hire. Most of the troops in this game you come to find are people that he hired directly.
Yeah, it's funny. You say that Roman has the kind of air around him where you think he might have killed people in the past. And within like a minute and a half of knowing him, he kills your best friend. Sully.
Yes. Sully goes down.
Like, it's boom, instantly. It's like, sad. Okay, well, that's... Now, the only thing I didn't like about this was Nate gets over Sully's death pretty fast.
Yeah, like, he will comment on it a little bit to Elena with like a, oh, shucks, kind of mentality. Mm-hmm. I mean, spoilers for a 13-year-old game, but like Sully doesn't stay dead because he conveniently was wearing, you know, like 5 minutes before he died,
he put
a journal in his breast pocket and he got shot in the chest. And if you've seen enough adventure movies, it's not a surprise, but like you're saying, the way that they even react to his death, it's kind of like, maybe he's not dead because we're really not treating this like it should have mattered, you know?
Right. And I think there is a little foreshadowing there. Like, I think you do see him put the journal in his chest pocket.
Oh, he very clearly does. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was one of those things like, oh, okay. Well, like then like afterwards, okay, I get it. Yeah.
If you, like I said, if you've seen this happen enough, you're like, oh, there's the book.
Yeah. But then after that, you do some running around. You get into some car combat, which is pretty cool. Mm-hmm. But we get to meet Eddie Raja.
Yes, another treasure hunting mercenary. That seems to be the Nathan's bad guy bread and butter in these types of games. And it's always funny whenever he meets these guns for hire. He always has some kind of line of dialogue that's like, "Oh, they've run into each other before in their hunt for gold." So it Eddie's got like some really amusing moments with Nate. Actually, the introduction of Eddie leads to, I think, what's my favorite cinematic moment in this game. Eddie has outwitted Nate and he's got him in a prison cell and they're like trading barbs back and forth, like, you, no, you, blah, you know. And Eddie starts putting the screws to Nate. He's like, well, I'm going to find your little girlfriend and she's going to pay if you don't tell me where the treasure is. And Nate's like, I wouldn't, you know, underestimate her. She, you know, and Eddie goes, how much trouble could one girl be? And then the wall of the prison cell is like destroyed. And you see Elena, she tied a chain to a Jeep and dragged the whole cell out and lets Nate escape. And it's one of just like, it's so exciting and fun. And that's actually what starts the vehicle section you mentioned. But this game is heavy on fun and just like great little character moments like that.
And one awesome thing I will say is you get a little bit of it just before this when you're kind of running away from people, or I think you set a trap off or something, when you're inside the tombs a little bit, where there's an action set piece where it's very Crash Bandicoot light, where you're running towards the screen.
Yes, yes.
As everything's crumbling behind you. Those action set pieces, and I think this is the only one that's in this game, but the action set pieces to the Uncharted games are really what make those games fantastic. You know, we talked about Rayman Legends and playing the music levels, how you have to do everything flawlessly in one take. The Uncharted games after this one, so 2, 3, and 4, have these set pieces that are just fantastic and phenomenal, that it's you're like, how am I still playing this, or how am I living this movie sequence right now? Like, it's an interactive movie sequence, and it's just breathtaking when you're doing it. And I know at the time a lot of people probably were aware of it, but Uncharted 3, one of the best sequences was spoiled due to a Subway commercial. I don't know if you remember those.
I don't
back in 2011. Good, don't watch them because it would spoil it for you.
Oh, I was gonna spend all night watching Subway commercials, Josh.
But the action set pieces to these games, like, really is what makes that video game movie like happen. Like, it's so crazy, like these interactive like set pieces that you're it's like, it's that whole like 80s 90s like practical effects in a movie or something like that. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. And yeah, just building on what you're saying, in terms of this being more cinematic in its presentation, except when you're in combat, there's no, like, HUD displays on the interface of the game at all. Like, when combat starts, you'll get a little counter up top with your ammo for the gun that you're using. And then beyond that, like, it's clear. You can see the entire screen at the same time. There's no radar at the bottom taking up a huge chunk of that corner. There's no, like, just, there's no big obnoxious, like, arrow guiding you to your next objective. It's just you and Nate. And that's it. And that's what I really admired about it, is how clean the game is throughout, visually.
Yeah. Yeah. After you fall off of a cliff, which is a really cool set piece where they have him surrounded, and he's like, hold on. She's like, I am. He's like, okay. And they just go right off the back. They just drive backwards off the cliff. I was like, all right, that was cool. Like, the one thing I love about Nate, and you get it in the platforming and you get it in the combat, is Nate is an everyday person.
Yeah.
Unlike all of your big macho action guys from video games, Nate is an everyday person. Like, when a grenade drops next to him and he's like, no. like, it's so real in what he's doing. Or like when he's climbing and he's like huffing and puffing and like making comments about like, oh, I thought it was going to be easier and all these things. Like,
he must have the worst hands. Genuine. Like, the skin on his hands must be so calloused and so scuffed up.
Yeah.
From all the climbing he does. But no, I know exactly what you mean. Like, he gets frustrated in believable ways, but he's also got this degree of, like, likability and charm. He can be a smartass when he needs to be, but further into the game, as he and Elena are being pursued by these treasure hunters, he kind of starts to realize that his life and Elena's life are in real danger. And at one point he even says, like, let's just give this up because we're gonna die if we go any further. And it's only because Elena reminds him of his passion for history and everything that he keeps going. That made me like him, you know, where, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, oh, he's considerate of others. He's not just selfish for himself, you know?
Before we get into this moment, though, because I know what you're talking about, when they're sitting there and they're looking at the map on the table inside of the one cathedral or something like that they're in.
Yes.
Right? Let's talk about my least favorite part of this whole game, and that is the jet ski part.
The jet ski vehicle sections, they start and then the final stretch of them are pretty bad for me.
Yeah, and I understand what they were going for, and I will let you know that you really don't need to worry about that too much in the other games coming up.
Okay.
I think it was just one of those things like, oh, like, let's see if we can do this. And, like, they do. It's, I don't know. It's, it just,
well, for
it's frustrating.
Yeah. For the listeners, there's two sequences in this game where you have to operate a jet ski to get to get different locations. And how it works is Nate is driving the jet ski. And so you, in turn, are accelerating, braking, or steering. But Elena is riding behind him with a grenade launcher. And you can use Elena to clear obstacles, which basically come in the form of explosive gas canisters in the water, and enemies who will be shooting you from the shorelines. But the thing is, you have to stop the jet ski entirely for Elena to shoot. You can't drive and shoot at the same time, even though, in my opinion, there's no reason why that's not possible, given like games like Grand Theft Auto, you know, where you can operate vehicles and shoot at the same time. So it did get frustrating, especially in the second jet ski, where you have to be, you have to ride up river rapids that kind of push you back while enemies are still shooting at you. I had to do that section over a lot.
Yeah. Imagine trying to do it on the hardest difficulty.
Ugh, no, I ain't got time for that. Nope.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So their adventure continues. They discover more things about how in the 1940s, the Nazis were searching for El Dorado as well. Roman and Navarro and Eddie, you know, keep catching up with them, or they keep escaping them. Things like that. The game takes a very interesting tonal shift about three quarters through, where they discover an underground Nazi facility. And in exploring it, they start finding what can only be described as like wall crawling monsters that are humanoids. I would describe them as like more aggressive versions of Gollum from Lord of the Rings, basically.
Yeah, I would say like Wendigos almost. Do you know what I'm talking? Like,
what are those from?
Wendigos are like mythical man-eating creatures, like spirit forms. Like, they're based off of like like Indian tribe people, but like they were in the video game Until Dawn, kinda.
Okay.
Very similar to, like, they were like creatures that have been forgotten. Like they have like longer arms, but like, yeah, they like crawl on walls and stuff like that. That's what they reminded me of.
Okay.
But this area, like when you first meet them, it's like, and it registers, there's this whole supernatural effect to it.
Yeah. Like, which, ooh, El Dorado, is it cursed? Yeah. Like, what happened to these people? You know,
it's spooky, crazy. Like, are these things trying to protect it? Like what's going on? But the worst thing happens is Eddie Raja gets killed in this part. And it makes me so sad.
Poor one out for Eddie.
Cause he goes out bad.
Yeah. Really rough. And like, he seemed like he might be redeeming himself. Cause he's kind of, Nate and Eddie are like locked in this like little like circular underground arena, and they're fighting off these monsters. And then Eddie almost falls off a cliff, and Nate goes to catch him. And right before Eddie like gives him his hand, the monsters pull him down and bite his neck. And it's really like, ooh.
Yeah, it's rough.
So the game gets a little like Resident Evil here in a way, where you're walking down dark corridors.
It has this like scary, like horror aspect now to the game. And I actually really liked it because it was a change of pace.
Mm-hmm.
And this is kind of where your third act hits. Like, yes. You're in this facility, you're trying to set up these generators to power up the facility, but as you're doing it, you're like, you only have like a flashlight, or like certain areas are lit, but these things are crawling on the walls, and like you can hear them screeching. You're like, all right, where are they? And they take forever to put down.
Yeah. They take up a lot of ammo. I mean, luckily the labs are littered with old guns, so you I never found myself hurting for ammo, but you had to pump them full to kill them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in the Nazi facility, you turn on the power generators and you actually see a movie playing on an old like reel.
Yes. Okay.
And Nate kind of goes up to it and starts watching it, and you get to see what created these creatures. Like, these creatures are not like mythical creatures and whatnot. They're actually people.
Yes.
They're actually the Nazis that are from this facility.
Yeah. And what happened, in, like you said, in a very Indiana Jones-esque kind of twist, is they found El Dorado, and El Dorado is not.
El Dorado wasn't a city.
Nope. It's this big, ornate gold coffin, and inside is this diseased corpse that has a virus in it, and anyone who comes in contact with it is basically infected and turned into these monsters by the virus.
Very similar to the Ark of the Covenant.
Yeah, literally, yeah. So that becomes Nate's new kind of quest, is that he needs to stop El Dorado from being taken by Roman, because if that disease gets out, it could be the end of the world. So,
and in this time frame, and I think it might have been a little bit before or a little bit after this, I'm sorry, we missed a really pivotal moment where Nate finds Drake.
Oh, yes. He finds the body of Sir Francis Drake.
Yeah. And it shows that they were not trying to remove the statue.
Mm-hmm.
They were trying to they were trying to hide it.
Yes. Drake died trying to keep the El Dorado artifact hidden underground because the virus infected all of Francis Drake's men. And so he died trying to keep it from getting brought up to the surface of this underground, cavern.
It's crazy.
Yeah. So from here, the game kind of starts accelerating towards its finale. A little bit before this, we forgot to mention, Nate and Elena find out that Sully is alive, and that Roman and Navarro have been kind of forcing him to help them find El Dorado. And he's been like sometimes helping them, but sometimes screwing with them. But basically, once all the friends are reunited, they're all on the same team. And Elena gets kidnapped by Roman, so it's just Nate and Sully teaming up, and you finally come to like the climactic showdown sequence where we're in this big underground vault, and Roman and Navarro there, and they have the El Dorado coffin. And Navarro tells Roman, hey, you should open that, like, see what the real treasure is. And Roman's instantly infected, and then so this is yet another twist. You find out that Navarro knew, as much as Nate did, for at least some time, he knew about the infectious disease. and he purposely set Roman up to get infected so that he could kill him. And then you find out that Navarro's plan is not to take this solid gold statue for, you know, the wealth. He wants to take the virus and sell it as a biological weapon. And then the final set piece of the game is you having a gun/fist fight with Navarro and his men on the deck of this boat in a rainstorm in order to stop the boat from getting away with the El Dorado coffin.
Yeah, the fight at the end, not as cool as Winter Soldier, but
no.
Still good. Like it's a little repetitive at times, but it led up to a very underwhelming final fight with Navarro.
Yeah, where it's just some quick time events. This is actually a symptom overall of something that I remembered being a problem in games at this point in gaming history, like the late 2000s, early 2010s, of just underwhelming finales. I remember the end of Bioshock 2 is just, you know, you have to fight waves of big daddies until like you're in a room that's filling up with water, and the point is that, well, the game's over by this point. You're just trying to wait for an escape pod to launch, so you're just fighting waves of big daddies until the escape pod launches.
Well, the same thing happened in Bioshock Infinite as well. You're on top, you're doing the you know, you're preventing the turrets from getting destroyed. But I think this all probably started around like 2005 when it came to these things, because you have like, you know, really cool set pieces with like a giant knife fight, and it's just a giant quick time event inside of it. And it's, you know, the kind of like, you know, something your franchise could have been great. And then all of a sudden, you know, you play the rest of the game and you realize that Resident Evil 4 still sucks. You would think, you know, the quick time events would have saved it, but I guess it didn't. Like, yeah.
Well, you know, anyway. I'm not taking that bait today. So anyway, that is the finale, though.
That's right. We're going to talk about a good game today.
You beat up Navarro, and you save the day. And in a very appropriate, you know, kind of adventure movie twist, the final blow to Navarro is Nate saves Elena from a burning helicopter on the deck of the ship, and Navarro is behind them, and he's like, got a gun. He's like, that's it, you're dead. So Nate and Elena, with all their strength, push the teetering helicopter off of the ship. And as it falls, a cable tightens around Navarro's leg, and he gets dragged off the ship. And also attached to that cable is the El Dorado coffin. So Navarro and his treasure all get dragged to the bottom of the ocean to, you know, be confined to a watery grave. And then...
But you would think that that's it. The treasure's gone, right? We see this in what I believe is your mom's favorite movie, Tom.
Oh.
We see this trope happen in your mom's favorite movie.
Second favorite movie. But yes, The Mummy.
From
1999, The Mummy.
Just because all the treasure is gone and everything is all lost, Victor goddamn Sullivan comes out of nowhere with a boat filled with treasure.
Yep. He scooped up a whole bunch of gold and jewels from that big vault we mentioned that the coffin was in. So yeah, you're not going home with El Dorado, but you're gonna be going home with something. So yeah, Victor goddamn Sullivan and Nathan Drake and Elena Fisher all sail off into the sunset with at least a little bit of fortune on their side. And that's the end of this nice little chill adventure game.
So overall, you liked it?
Overall, I had a lot of fun with this game. I very much enjoyed it. And I liked experiencing it, not just to catch up on history, but also to notice some things about
learn about
history.
What El Dorado was, yeah.
Well, not just real world history, but so at the point that this game was being developed, the Tomb Raider series in the mid-2000s had kind of bottomed out. The most recent game that I believe had come out was Tomb Raider Angel of Darkness, and that was met with a lot of criticism for getting away from what made Tomb Raider fun. And overall, people were just like, eh, maybe this adventure exploring franchise is gone. And when Uncharted came out, a lot of people were like, this looks like Tomb Raider with a guy. But really, it did take a lot of the things that Tomb Raider had done, and it brought them up to a modern standard, you know? So I was playing this game, and as I mentioned, my sister like came by and watched me play it for a little bit. And she was like, this feels a lot like Tomb Raider. Now, what she meant by that was this felt like a lot like Tomb Raider 2013, because she had experience with that game, right?
Right.
So what I'm getting at is I think it was really interesting playing Uncharted and seeing all the things that Tomb Raider 2013 actually kind of used as inspiration to reboot Lara Croft in 2013 when the new version of Tomb Raider came out. A lot of similar gun combat mechanics, a lot of similar focus on big set pieces where you're running away from obstacles and, you know, doing cinematic cool adventure stunts. And the climbing and traversal is very similar to Uncharted too.
Yeah, it's weird that a lot of people say, well, Uncharted just ripped off Tomb Raider. And then like 6 years later after this was released, a lot of things that is in Tomb Raider came from Uncharted. So it's like, what's the saying? Imitation is the highest form of flattery?
Yeah, basically. I don't really consider it stealing on either account. I just think Uncharted saw...
Well, yeah, she has a bow and arrow. He has a grenade launcher. I get
completely
it.
Completely different. But, you know, like, sincerely, like, because the way, what Tomb Raider does with its story even is a lot different than what Uncharted is doing, you know, like, and also just, I don't see a problem with Uncharted looking at what Tomb Raider had done and said, well, we don't want this type of gameplay to die. Let's see how we can do it better. And then Tomb Raider saying, we don't want Lara Croft as a character to die. Let's bring her up to the modern adventure standards. You know, it's like how rock and roll was invented from, you know, jazz and the blues. It's like, how do you look at one thing and make it new?
Well, see, when this game was first shown, I think back in 2005 or 2006, a lot of people criticized it, though, for being like, I think they called it Dude Raider, where it was as a guy in Tomb Raider. But the game was, I think, more than that. And I think it came down from Nathan Drake himself.
Yeah.
People actually spending time with that character, realizing he is just an everyday person. He says he's a descendant from Sir Francis Drake, but do you really believe it? The way that he is, the way that he acts with people, like, he might be, like, there is that one moment with him and Elaine where she's talking to him about the ring that's around his neck and what it means and all this stuff. But
yeah, he claims it's Drake's, he claims it's Francis Drake's ring. But like, overall, the game does give you enough vibes to say that he may be overinflating himself just to kind of, like, in a kind of like a Star-Lord way from Guardians of the Galaxy, you know, like, he wants to have a reputation even if he hasn't earned it yet.
So Drake himself is like, he's just so real.
Yeah.
And I think that's what sets this game apart from a lot of games around this type of genre, is Drake, Sully, and Elena are real people. You probably know someone like this. Like this person, you probably know someone like Elena. You probably know, like, it's one of those things. Like, it did add more of a modern take on these action adventure stereotypes, mm-hmm. almost.
Yep,
and grounded it a lot.
Yes, and I'm actually really excited to see where these characters go. I'm gonna jump into Uncharted 2 very soon, and I'm looking forward to maybe talking about Nathan Drake at some point in the future.
Well, that's all the time that we can spend in the past, so thanks for listening. Subscribe to A Cast of the Past on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. And stay up to date with A Cast of the Past by making sure you follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. There you can be the first to know when new episodes drop, as well as joining in on discussions on all things gaming. And until next time, we'll see you in the future.